The Mike Lupica Podcast.
New York Daily News columnist and best-selling author.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In-your-face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A billion-dollar industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us again on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we will be talking with one of my great friends in the business, Mike Greenberg. But before we get started with Michael, this from Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. Welcome to this week's edition of the Mike Lupica Podcast. I have been remiss in not getting my friend Michael Greenberg back on this podcast with me. Anybody who reads my column or listen to me on the radio or listen to this podcast knows I always said he was my favorite person up at ESPN. He recently finished a amazing long run with Mike Golic. And he will start sometime next year a brand new show set in New York City that will air in the mornings on ESPN. He's having a very good run as a Northwestern grad this fall. He joins me today. Hey, Michael.
Listen, I come with a request. So I told my son, Steven, who you know is your biggest fan, over breakfast this morning, I said, I'm going to be on Mike Lupica's podcast today. And he said, ask him when he's going to write QB2. So QB1 is his favorite of all of your books, and he said, ask him when he's going to write QB2. He's waiting for those characters to come back in a sequel.
Well, tell Steven, I don't know whether they will ever come back. We are discussing a sequel to Heat. Tell him that.
Okay.
And right before we started the podcast today, I got up to about page 180, tell Steven, on the new basketball novel that I am writing for next fall that will deal at least in part with a couple of kids who are trying to figure it out, both of whom are stars on the same team after having never played together, drawing on everything that's happened in the NBA. So I know Steven is a baller, so tell him that that's what's coming next fall.
All right, we'll look forward to that one for sure.
All right, listen, but right as Mike and I were getting ready to do this today, I informed him that I had just gotten word from my son, Zach, who's at the winter meetings working for the MLB Network, that our friend Bob Costas has been elected this morning to the broadcaster's wing of the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
I'm so delighted for that, and you were the one who told me, and I will send him a note after you and I finish this conversation. And so let me tell you just a quick personal story about Bob Costas. First and foremost, anytime he comes on television, my kids point and say, Dad, there's your idol, because I've always referred to him as my idol. That when I first started in broadcasting in Chicago in the mid-90s, there was a long-form piece that Sports Illustrated did on Bob Costas. And I read it, and I admired him so much. At that time, he was hosting the late-night show later on NBC, as well as all of his sports stuff. And he was as good at that, candidly, as he was at any sports, and he was as good at that as anybody was at that. And so I looked up to the guy so much. I carried that that article around with me in my briefcase for a very long time, because that was my inspiration. I wanted to be the next Bob Costas. So fast forward many years, in about 2005, a little local magazine here in Fairfield County where I live did a little feature on me. And in it, one of the things that I said was that people have often referred to me as a poor man's Bob Costas, and I consider that the greatest compliment you could ever pay me. So a few months later, I don't think a whole lot of that, my cell phone rings, and it is a number I don't recognize, so like an idiot, I don't answer it. And sometime later, I check the message, and it's Bob Costas calling to say that somehow he had seen this and that he was flattered, but that I shouldn't consider myself a poor man's anyone and that I was doing a good job, and just a couple of other nice, supportive thoughts. And let me tell you, I did not know that messages automatically erased from your phone then. I walked around playing that for everyone. Do you want to hear my Costas message? And it was one of the great thrills and one of the great early moments in my career that I sort of thought to myself, wow, someone's actually paying attention to what I'm doing. So I look up to Costas as much as I look up to just about anyone, and I'm thrilled to hear this news. He is extraordinarily deserving. So I think that's just fabulous.
You know, Mike, it's funny. I mean, Bob and I have been friends for 35 years. His son, Keith, who works with my son at MLB, is my godson. We were in each other's weddings. And I tell people this all the time. Just the turndowns in Bob's career, from 60 Minutes to Nightline to the Today Show, would be a Hall of Fame broadcasting career. And because I've sort of living it with him the last couple of years, Michael, you have to step back sometimes and realize, and I'm a little prejudiced, okay? Nobody's ever had a career that has had the sweep and the depth that Bobby's has.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, you know, and you would know that piece of it better than I would know it. I didn't know about all the things that he had turned down. I'd heard some of that. I didn't know all of it. But look, I don't think anyone has ever gone on the air talking about sports in a more intelligent and reasonable way. There are some people who talk about sports intelligently, but not always reasonably. There are some people who talk about sports reasonably and not always intelligently. The combination of intelligence and reason is a hard one to find in any walk of our society today, and particularly in the insanity that is the discourse around sports. And I don't think anyone combines those two better than he does. I genuinely would have voted for him if this was something you could vote for, to have succeeded Bud Selig as the commissioner of baseball. It was never going to happen, obviously. I know there were a lot of people who supported it. But, you know, his lifelong love of baseball is well known by anyone who knows anything about him. So I'm sure of all the honors he's received, I can't imagine that there is one that will mean more to him than this will.
Talking to my pal Mike Greenberg, recently ended an honorable, proud run with his friend Mike Golic in the morning. Michael, there's so many things in sports that we have to get to today. Talk to me about the end of that run, okay? And what it's like right now being on this kind of hiatus where sometimes I'm afraid, and I tell you on Twitter sometimes that we've got to get you out of the house more because you don't have an outlet and you are someone who has opinions about everything.
Yeah, it has been the time off has been better than I expected. And you know, you're so prolific in this, but you know that I've done some writing and that I've wanted to, and I've always wondered what it would be like to be able to write without having to dedicate as much of your mental energy to doing a daily show as I have. I've always described doing a daily talk show, and I did one for 18 years for 4 hours a day, as like chasing, you know, the old movies where there'd be a train pulling out of a station and this one guy running behind it, holding his hat on his head, trying to catch up to it. It's like that. You're running behind the train every single day, and you never catch it, but it never gets so far away that you give up. And there isn't a lot of time to look around when you're doing that because you're just so busy running after the train. So it has been, in some ways, actually, I've really enjoyed it. I think if I were just done and I wasn't ever going back, I would have a very different feeling about it than I have now. But knowing that it's sitting out there, that I am going to go back into a very similar daily existence than the one that I've been used to, I'm really trying very hard to enjoy this time. So you're right. There are times on an NFL Monday morning that I will wake up and I will say, I need to be a part of this conversation, but I know that I will be again. So that part of it has been fine. And in all honesty, as far as the way Mike and Mike ended, you know, the way people treated us, the way people reacted to it was infinitely greater than I expected. And you know, you sit there and you do the thing every day, as I say, and you're just, you don't really have much time to worry about much more than what you're going to say at 6:01 the following morning. So to have received the reaction that we did was really gratifying. I mean, I was really thrilled and grateful. And then now on we go, you know, and I'm writing. I will hopefully have most of a book done by the time I start up again, and then I'll have a new show before long, and I will be right back to all of this. So it's actually been a really nice time, at least so far. And as I've joked with many people, and you will appreciate this, if it had happened over the summer, I would have made a run at the tour. I really believe I would have been out there, and I would have just been playing and practicing every single day. So I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that right now it's like 20 degrees outside.
You just said that, didn't you, about the tour? You see, and that just plays into the narrative that I've just got to get you out of the house and out of your own head. And you know what you just said is we on a much smaller scale, obviously. But maybe not. I don't know. When sports reporters went off the air last May, we were overwhelmed by that day on social media. I didn't follow it. Taylor Lupica followed it, and it was overwhelming, Michael. I mean, we were like the second. I don't think people processed that we were going off the air until I finally did my final parting shot. And then this thing for about 6 hours that day. Everybody put messages on Twitter and Facebook and about growing up with the show. And so, you know, you talked about how ugly the discourse has gotten in the modern world, certainly not just in sports. And to feel that you did something that made people, and you and I have had this conversation before, people told you what they used to tell us. They felt like they were part of the conversation, even though we couldn't hear them while we were having it.
Yeah, there's two pieces to that. Part of it is that, look, I mean, you guys were great, and you guys were doing it before anyone else was doing it. I sometimes talked about how Mike and I were doing it before a lot of the more popular sports debate and conversation shows that are on the air are now. But you guys were on years and years before we started. So there's that piece of it. I think people just like things in the society in which we live now, and this is not to diminish what you guys individually accomplished or what we individually accomplished, but we'd be remiss if we didn't also just point out the notion that having things you can count on, that in a world where everything is changing and everything is crazy and we're running in 10 different directions at a time and the news cycle lasts about 8 minutes and everything else, that knowing that those four guys are going to be sitting there in those same chairs on Sunday morning and I can get my coffee and my bagel and I can watch them and they're going to entertain me, and they're going to make me think a little bit. And I've been doing that since that time in my life, when my kids were little, or before my kids were born, or when my father was still alive, or whatever any individual's direct connection to it was. It becomes a personal relationship, but it does become more significant than just sitting and listening to other people talk. So there is just something to be said for being around a really long time. People get accustomed to you. You become a part of their routine and their lives. And if you can get into that area, it takes a long time to get into that area. It's not if it was easy to do, then everyone would do it. But if you can get yourself there, then you become something that matters to people at least a little bit.
We're talking to Mike Greenberg on the Mike Lubega podcast. All right, we're going to jump around now. We're going to get to the Jets in a minute. Michael, Larry David is a huge Jets fan and a huge New York Yankees fan. After the Giancarlo Stanton deal, this is the text I got from him the other day. I have to say, I hate this deal. It's like the rich kid in his freshman year getting a Corvette. They were easy to root for last year. Now they're back to their old ways. What say you about that?
Well, I mean, I guess I understand what he's saying. I think that the universe out there that lives to hate the Yankees will be able to rally around this. Because last year, he's right. There was nothing to hate about that group of people. It was not Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez. Not that these were all individually unlikable people, but it was not Teixeira and Sabathia and A.J. Burnett and A-Rod over the course of a five-year span or however long it was between all those signings, you know, coming together and the Yankees spending $500 million on their contracts and making everyone else feel secondary. This was just a well-run organization by a guy who I think is actually extraordinarily underrated and appreciated for what he does in Brian Cashman.
Right.
Using the same reason.
I don't think he's underrated, Michael. I don't think he's underrated anymore.
No.
It's been a love fest over the last year and a half.
Good. Then good for him. I don't know that nationally people see it that way. I think that there is still a misunderstanding nationally. If you have that interlocking NY attached to your business card, I think people have an inclination to just immediately assume you have built-in advantages that others do not. And while I guess there is some truth to that, it is not nearly so much that way as it was a decade or 15 years ago. So he put together a team using essentially the same means and the same resources that everyone else had at their disposal. So I do think that there was an element of the country that was actually rooting for them against the Cleveland Indians in the American League Division Series last year, and then rooting for them again in the ALCS. And I know that I, as one who grew up, both my parents are from the Bronx, and I found it, so I was a Yankee fan from before I could walk, I found it more enjoyable to root for them last year than I had when they were the Evil Empire. And so will this bring back a little element of the Evil Empire? It will. Now, that said, I have to believe if you're a real Yankee fan, and look, Larry David, and I love him, I don't love anyone like I love Larry David, but he's a little nuts. If you're a Yankee fan, I have to believe that this was one of the great things that you could ever possibly imagine. To compare anything to Mantle and Maris sounds sacrilegious, but I'm not exactly sure what the next comparison to it would be. But you would know this as well, if not better than I would. What in Yankee history or any team's history would compare to what you would least look on paper and say Stanton and Judge could be over the next 5 years?
Yeah, it's Ruth and Garrick. I wrote a column about this the other day and cautioned people by saying, yes, the last time the Yankees brought in a home run bat, it's similar to this, they were going to win every World Series from now until the end of time. That was Alex Rodriguez in 2004. Michael, they won one World Series while he was a New York Yankee. They have won one World Series in the last 17 years. It's interesting to me how whenever the Yankees do something like this, there is this idea that order has been restored to the universe as if it's still the 50s and the 60s, except it's not, Michael. I was looking this up the other day. In the last 40 years, the Yankees have won the World Series 5 times. In the last 10, the San Francisco Giants have won 3 times. In the last 13, the Red Sox have. So every time this happens, yes, there was a period, 96 to 2000, they were as great a team as the Yankees have ever had. Around that, over the last 35 of those 40 years, they've won one World Series. So there's a skewed idea that this is the Yankees doing what they've always done, except, again, they won in 2000, they won in 2009, nothing else other than that. And between 78 and 96, they didn't win at all. So it's interesting when everybody gets giddy when they make a move like this. And I just say to people, hold on. Just remember what people were saying in February of 2004 when they got A-Rod.
Yeah, that's fair. Now, that said, I did an event last year with Tom Ricketts, who is the owner of the Chicago Cubs.
Sure.
And he was still very much, and this was in Chicago, and he was still very much basking in the glow of their first World Series. And I asked him a variety of questions about CO Epstein and the strategy they employed. And the strategy that they had was, we have figured out, this is what he said, and it's not obviously rocket science, but that baseball obviously breaks itself into two separate components. There is putting yourself in position to have a chance to win. And then there is the somewhat random who winds up winning it in the end. You know, back when the Yankees were dominating Major League Baseball, there was one champion in each league. They win the pennant. They play each other in the World Series. You would have, let's just call it a 50-50 chance of winning the championship if you were the best team in your league. That is obviously no longer the case. So the notion that teams are going to dominate by winning World Series in the way they used to is probably unrealistic. If you look at a team that is there, and you probably have the numbers in front of you that you did the column, I mean, how many years in that stretch of time have the Yankees not been in the postseason, not had an opportunity? I can think of two. Is it two or three?
I think they missed the playoffs 3 times in the last 20-odd years.
So they're there, you know, and you know, you get knocked off because all those calls, bad calls that even themselves out over the course of 162 games go against you, or a ball that bounces in the wrong direction that evens itself up by over the course of 162 games bounces away from you. They're there. And I don't know. I mean, the Red Sox feel like they've been there a lot in that time, though not nearly as often. The Giants, they either win the World Series or they win like 70-something games. So the Yankees have been consistently very good. I saw that stat that Derek Jeter played in a combined total in his career of 3 games in which his team was mathematically eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah.
So they've been very, very good. Winning championships may not be in baseball. Tell me what you think of this statement. Winning championships today in baseball may not be the most effective way, the most reasonable way to measure just how good a franchise is. That may sound counterintuitive, but I think it actually makes some sense.
talking to Mike Greenberg. Okay, the Larry David will help us make this transition to the Jets. Now, he has been grousing to me all year, and I would say to him, wait a minute, hold on. The Jets were pretty entertaining to me until the season ended against the Broncos last Sunday. And he kept saying, I don't care. If we don't have a quarterback, it's a waste of time for all of the enjoyment and the excitement they brought you. Even with the fourth quarter collapses earlier, Michael, was this season, as a passionate Jets fan, a waste of time?
No, I'm going to say no. And going into it, I would have agreed with him. If the Jets wind up something in the neighborhood of 6-10, which it looks like they're going to, I would have said that's the worst of all possible scenarios. They'd be much, much, much better off going 1-15 and having the opportunity without trading anything to draft Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold or whoever it is that winds up they wind up identifying as that guy. But there are two things that have happened along the way. One of them is I think I've seen the value of these guys winning. I think when you've ingrained this losing culture into something, you have to purge a lot of that before you can come out the other side in that sport more than any other. And I think that there are some young guys on that team, some young guys on the defense, a couple of receivers, particularly Robbie Anderson, who has been a revelation.
Yeah.
That I think to see them play well and compete and be in games and suffer for losing, there are more pieces there than I had expected. So I think that it actually will wind up being beneficial to them to have had a better season than was expected, to have played meaningful games the way they have and as long as they did. Now, that said, obviously, it doesn't answer the really big question, which is who the hell is the quarterback going to be the next time you are going to try and win something of consequence? Look, the reality is they're still going to have a top 10 draft pick. They're probably not going to win another game now that Josh McCown is hurt. So they'll finish 5-11. I believe if the season ended today, they would have the ninth pick. That may improve, if you will, over the next 3 weeks. So maybe they wind up with a seventh or eighth pick, something like that. You still have an opportunity, if you want to, if you fall in love with one of these guys, to go out and get one if you believe he's the future of the franchise. And I will tell you what I would do, what I would be strongly in favor of doing, is bringing back Josh McCown for another year. And let whoever it is you draft sit behind him and learn. Because that guy is a pro, and I have been very impressed with him all year long. I would love to see him in that mentor role. So if it's now, having said all of those things, I was with one of the very few assignments I've had since the end of Mike and Mike was I taped a bunch of things with Todd McShay and Mel Kiper last week about the end of the college football season and starting the process of looking ahead to the draft. And one of the questions I asked was, what happened in these last 3 months that took Sam Darnold from being a once-in-a-lifetime prospect to a guy that has all these question marks about him? People were going to suck for Sam, and now all of a sudden he desperately needs to go back to college for another year, and he isn't even the number one quarterback in most people's minds in this year's quarterback class. So I don't know that there is a lock amongst any of these rookies that might come out. I'm not interested at all in Baker Mayfield. I'll tell you that right now. Josh Rosen, there are questions.
Wait, but why not,
Josh?
Mike, why not?
Yeah.
Why not Baker Mayfield?
Josh Rosen strikes me as a guy. Look, I don't know anything about anything, but Josh Rosen feels to me like a guy who this is going to sound like a terrible thing to say, but I think to be a great football player, particularly at that position, you must be the most singularly focused person that you can possibly imagine. You must have no other interests. You must have no other desires. You must want nothing else in life. Last year, Myles Garrett, whose job it is to rush the passer, was being criticized by talent evaluators because he has some interest in dinosaurs. And that seemed to them to be a concern, because whether or not he will still want to go out there and stop the run on a 3rd-and-1 on a freezing cold day in Cleveland in December. Josh Rosen, I do not think, lives and dies with this stuff. But what do I know? I just sit here 3,000 miles away and watch. He obviously throws the ball well. If they get him, I will root like crazy for him to turn out to be good. But I'm not sold. I think that if you want to address the quarterback situation, there will be players out there you could go out and sign. They'll be expensive, but you could go out and sign who at least we know what they are on the pro level. And the first one I would name, and you won't be able to do it because they're going to franchise him if they don't get him signed, but the first one I would go get is Jimmy Garoppolo. You only have to watch Jimmy Garoppolo play for 3 minutes to see exactly what all the fuss is about. And Bill Belichick did everything he could to keep from trading him. He did everything he could to keep that guy on the Patriots, and that to me is the best endorsement you can imagine. So if they could find some miraculous way to get Jimmy Garoppolo, that would be my first choice. Now, the 49ers have the option of franchising him, and they probably will if they don't wind up making a long-term deal with him. So he probably isn't an option, but that would be my first choice of all the things that might happen.
We're talking with my pal Mike Greenberg on the Mike Lupica podcast. More with Mike in a minute, but first, a word from BarkBox. BarkBox is a great way to try a variety of treats and toys for your dog from local and small businesses that you may not otherwise be able to find. Each monthly box is themed, like Country Fair or Brooklyn Hipster, and packed with new and unique toys that continue to keep dogs engaged, like my three lunatic Norwich Terriers, interested and happy. Every month, BarkBox paw picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match a dog's unique needs, including allergies and heavy chewer preferences. If your dog does not like something in the box, they'll send you something they will love for free, because BarkBox is all about dog happiness. Free shipping on any BarkBox within the continental United States. My dogs are going to love it when the treats and toys show up at the door. It will keep them happy, and it's convenient for me and for my family. For a free extra month of BarkBox, visit BarkBox.com/Lupica when you subscribe to a 6 or a 12-month plan. That's BarkBox/Lupica to get a free month when you subscribe to a 6 or 12-month plan. Check them out today and make your dog happy. Mike, let me ask you something, and this is not based in any sort of reporting I've done on this, because I'm not sure there's any reporting. Do you think Mike Maccagnan has a guy in his mind who is playing in the league who he thinks he can get apart from Garoppolo? Because I keep thinking that maybe he thinks he can get into play with Andrew Luck, for example, or maybe they can get into the Cousins suite. Is there a part of you as a Jets fan that is hopeful that he might have a double secret probation plan that nobody knows about?
Yeah. Well, look, I think it would be a breach of his fiduciary responsibility not to at least have run all those scenarios through and try to figure out if any of them make sense. Drew Brees, of all people, might become a free agent this offseason. Now, the great year they're having might negate that possibility. I wouldn't want to go down that road anyway. The Jets don't need a 40-year-old quarterback. Kirk Cousins is going to be really expensive because there are going to be a lot of teams in it on Kirk Cousins. I don't know that I think he's worth as much money as they probably would have to pay to get him, if indeed his value has remained where we thought it was going to be. Is it possible that A.J. McCarron is someone they've identified who would be much less expensive that they think they can build around and win with? There are a handful of guys walking the face of planet Earth that you bring them in and you say, because of him, we have the opportunity to win. There is a much larger list of guys, in my opinion, that you can say of them, with this guy, we have the opportunity to win if we do good things around him. What you have to do is find a way to get that guy in such a way that it doesn't break your bank/salary cap so that you can actually surround him with really good players. The Jets have good players. The Jets have a couple of running backs. They have a couple of receivers. They have a tight end. They need to make a couple of moves on the offensive line. They have the makings, I think, of a good defense that should get better as some of these young guys get a year or two into this, you know, another year into the system. So the Jets have a chance to be a good team, like to put a good team next year around a good quarterback. They don't necessarily have to go get, look, if Andrew Luck somehow becomes available and if he's not hurt in a way that it compromises him for the rest of his career, I'm wide open to having that conversation. But if not, then whether it's A.J. McCarron or someone like that who doesn't cost you a fortune of money that you could put really good pieces around and have a chance to win, that doesn't sound like a terrible idea to me either.
We're talking to Mike Greenberg, and I really think of this as almost a Red Cross-like mission on my part today, because you can hear, you can just hear in Greeny's voice how much he's had to get off his chest during this hiatus. All right, let's jump around. Michael, what we saw with Tom Savage last Sunday, And all of the explanations of how this man ended up going back into that football game in the world of CTE and everything else, Mike, it was shameful.
Yeah. His going back in that game was and is conclusive evidence that the system in place does not work.
Right.
And I do not blame Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien is standing there with 8 million things going on. It's not his job to see that his quarterback's hands are involuntarily shaking after a big hit. But if I, watching Red Zone on my couch, see that, then the notion that no one who has the ability to do something about it saw it is proof positive that the system doesn't work. Whether it's the independent neurologist, whether it's someone sitting in an office in New York City who can have a hotline, that somehow someone in an office in New York City can decide whether it's a catch or not.
Right, Mike, I was going to cut you off. Michael,
yeah.
I was going to cut you off when you said that, because I'm thinking they're able to make in seconds a decision. I was saying this the other day to Bob Ryan. They're able to make a decision literally in seconds whether or not they want to throw that stupid red challenge flag. But right. Nobody in the booth could say to Bill O'Brien last Sunday, hey, wait a minute, coach, his hands are shaking. We think he might be having a seizure.
Yeah, correct. I mean, you're 100% right. Everything about it is wrong. So I'm not here to try and figure out who is to blame. Is this on the Texans? Is it on the National Football League? Is it on it's just the system. The system doesn't work. Let me rephrase that. If the actual aim of the system is to ensure to whatever the best possible degree is available that players will not be put in the position he was in, then the system doesn't work. If the system is merely there so they can say, look, we have a system, we're doing the best we can to protect the health and safety of our players, then that's a different discussion. But if the actual intention of it is to make certain that a player a six-year-old can see that and say, boy, someone better take a good, strong look at this guy before they decide he can play again. If the system is really designed to keep that guy from running back out onto the field and playing four more snaps or whatever it is he did, then this system doesn't work.
Talking to Mike Greenberg, Michael, you know, it's obviously anybody who loves the sport understands and appreciates what an important story Carson Wentz was this season. Because I keep telling people, you know, you can talk about anthem protests all you want. There's so much more going on with the National Football League this year than that. And one of them is they were in desperate need of new storylines. And by that, I mean a storyline other than the Patriots are going to be great and Brady's still great and Belichick is a genius. Okay, here come the Eagles. And Mike, all I was thinking about after this kid tore up his knee last Sunday is they can do anything they want to protect quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers just rolled out of the pocket a little bit, and it may have cost him a chance at the Super Bowl this year, and it may now happen to this kid who has been such a breath of fresh air, a kid that only the scouts knew about 2 years ago, and here he was on his way to an MVP season.
Yeah, from North Dakota. Listen, I totally agree with you, and here's when people ask me, which they do frequently, and I'm sure they do you as well, why do you think that the National Football League is having the problems that it has? They then list 12 different options. Here are the 12 different things. Mike, tell me what the one reason is that the league is having all these troubles. And my answer is always, it is all of the above. What is happening to the National Football League right now is death by a thousand cuts. Everything that you might think is creating a problem for the league is happening. And much of it, not all, but much of it is self-inflicted. If I had to pick the single biggest problem they have is that they have managed to make themselves the least likable collection of people. And by this, I mean the people who actually run the league. I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about the people who run the league. The people who hide behind the shield and hide behind the commissioner have now managed to come out from behind that curtain inadvertently and make themselves the least likable collection of people I can imagine. But I'm digressing from your question. If you look, and Rodgers goes down, and Wentz goes down, and it feels like a never-ending list of quarterbacks. So you wind up, you realize just how important these guys are because the games are unwatchable without them. Unwatchable. If you don't have some emotional attachment or some financial attachment to a game between two teams that are playing mediocre or less than mediocre quarterbacks, I defy you to sit through the entire thing. And what we are learning is that this game of football that we thought was so endlessly compelling. It's not really.
No.
It's not if you take away the big hits. It's not when the, you know, I'll give you an example. I know I'm digressing, but I think this will make
no,
a good
you're
point.
Not. No, you're not.
When we watch video now of Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire, when they were chasing each other and chasing Roger Maris and breaking the home run record back in the late 90s, it just looks different than it used to. And that is the way watching big hits in football feels. There was a time when a big hit in football made everyone jump off the couch. My God, look at that. That is awesome. It's the same hit now. In fact, it is less. Most of them are far less violent than they used to be. And yet the reaction is totally different. The reaction is to get like a pit in your stomach. So it all looks different. That has hurt the league tremendously. So if you don't have that, if you're not selling the violence of the sport anymore, you have to sell sort of the beauty, the grace, and the skill of it. And if you don't have a quarterback who has those three things, and only about eight teams do, and only five of them are still standing, then the rest of them are at times a very tough sell from an entertainment standpoint. And I think that is hurting the NFL a lot.
Talking to Mike Greenberg on the Mike Lubica podcast, I referenced him before. I am an unbelievable Aaron Rodgers fanboy. I believe he is one of the greatest football players who have ever lived. I think he is the biggest star in a sport that even includes Tom Brady. Michael, what we're talking about is there have been very few appointment games. We're going to get one soon with the Steelers and the Patriots. But who's not going to watch when Aaron Rodgers runs out the field to play the Panthers on Sunday?
Absolutely. Yes, I agree with you. He is all of the things that you want a sports star to be, because he is as good as anyone and he is as watchable as anyone. Like there is, I guess, a beauty to watching the pocket passer slice and dice people up. And clearly Rodgers can do that, to the way Peyton Manning used to beat teams with his brain as though he was winning a game of chess where the players were actually standing on the board. But there is something just awe-inspiring about watching the things that Rodgers can do. He throws a ball, in my opinion, better than anyone I've ever seen. I go back to the 70s. I've never seen anyone throw a better ball than Aaron Rodgers. I believe that he moves, and we'll see if he's still able to / willing to do this coming back from the injury. But he moves and runs and does things with his feet as well as just about any quarterback that you've ever seen. I agree with you that he's the most talented quarterback I've ever seen. You have to divide these things up into best and most accomplished. He certainly isn't the most accomplished quarterback of his time or of all time, but I would agree that he might be the best. And yes, I think he is exactly what the league needs. And I'll tell you what else. He comes back at the same time that Wentz goes down. Who is it that Green Bay can't beat? I mean, if he comes back and he is Aaron Rodgers again, who is to say that they will not wind up in the Super Bowl against the Steelers or the Patriots this year? I would give them as good a chance as anybody.
No, they play the Panthers, they play the Vikings, they play the Lions. And again, it's a narrow path for them, and they're going to need a little bit of help. They got help from the Jaguars beating the Seahawks. But, oh, my God, just the idea that this guy could come riding over the hill and put the Packers on one of those rolls again, to me, that would be the great moment of the football season. We're talking to Mike Greenberg on the Mike Lupica podcast. Michael, what was your take? What was your take on the whole Goodell thing? And I know we just get numb to the kinds of money that is thrown around in sports, but weren't you a little bit horrified when you found out this guy's going to make $200 million?
Yeah, here's I guess the first way I would answer that question is to say, when you ask me the whole Goodell thing, I need to be more specific. by the whole Goodell, which whole Goodell thing are we talking about? Look, Roger Goodell's job is to sell. I have a good friend of mine who works for one of the auto insurance companies, and I said to him one time, my God, you guys must have all the money in the world, because no one advertises more than the auto insurance companies, whether it's Geico or Allstate or Progressive and all of them. And he said to me, Mike, remember, we sell a product that the government says it's illegal not to have. And while football, it's not illegal not to have it, you are selling a product everybody wants. You are selling a product everyone is interested in. There are more people interested in football in this country than probably pretty close to anything else. So I think that to give an enormous amount of credit to someone for having built the revenues and built a league, I'm not trying to diminish it. I'm not suggesting I could do it, but I think a lot of smart people could have done it. And then you start looking at the list of things that have happened dating back, I believe, to Ray Rice. I think the whole thing started with the mishandling. And to his credit, I mean, Roger Goodell has acknowledged mishandling that publicly and to his employers, the owners of the teams. Basically, for whatever reason, starting on that day, it feels like they cannot get out of their own way. It is just one thing after another after another. So whilst I don't begrudge anyone making as much money as they possibly can, I do find it curious, and I'm not at all surprised that someone like Jerry Jones would have serious questions about whether or not they should at least consider looking at other candidates or making some sort of significant changes in structure. I'm, I guess, a little bit surprised that he seems on such an island in so doing. So, look, whether $200 million, what do I care? It's not my money, and God bless him. But am I surprised by the whole thing? I am. I really am.
Mike, I may have told you this story before. My favorite story about NFL commissioners and the money they make for the league from television came from my late friend Bob Wessler, who was once president of both CBS News and CBS Sports. And he was really the godfather, along with my dear friend Michael Pearl, of the NFL Today, which set the template for all the pregame shows to come. And I said to him one time, I was sitting at Runyon's Bar, and I said to him, "What's it like negotiating the television contract with Pete Rozelle?" He says, "It's actually quite pleasant. You go over to Park Avenue, you go up to his office, he invites you in, he asks you if you'd like some tea or coffee or water or whatever. You chit-chat about his family and yours, and then he comes around the desk, puts a sack over your head, sticks a gun in your ear, and tells you how much you're going to pay next time."
That's pretty much it, right? I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, I don't ever like to diminish people's accomplishments. I'm sure they've done a lot of really good, smart things. But they're selling a product that everybody wants. If you invented a product that everybody wanted, if you invented a pill that with no negative ramifications on your health whatsoever was going to make you healthier, live longer, and feel better without any side effects that would be impactful to you, you wouldn't have a real hard time selling it. All you need to do is let people know that it exists, and they're going to line up to buy it. And that is pretty close to what they have in football. That's pretty close to what they're selling. So, look, I don't have anything personally against Roger Goodell. He's always been very nice to me, but I am surprised that the owners of the National Football League seem so dead set on getting that thing done as quickly as they possibly could. And, in fact, one of the things that I thought of is the owners moving in the way they did may very well speak to the way they really feel about Jerry Jones and speak more about his standing amongst them than it does about Goodell's standing amongst them.
Talking to Mike Greenberg on the Mike Lupica podcast, weren't you kind of shocked? Didn't it take Gronkowski out of the realm of being the big goofy guy to see that dirty hit against the Bills?
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, that was just awful. And, you know, he was apologetic and all of that. But, look, Gronkowski has always been more than just that big goofy guy, right? I mean, we like in the media to paint people in the way that we like to paint them. And I don't think that he is. I'm not suggesting that he is a dirty player. I'm not suggesting that he is a person with malicious intent in his life, that he is a malevolent person. He's probably a very nice person. But he is someone in whom or for whom or from whom we excuse things that we would never excuse from a multitude of other people. And I don't really know exactly why. We have just decided he's allowed to be a big, dopey frat boy, and we will put up with just about anything that if any number of other people who also have never gotten any significant trouble off the field or anything else for the very same behavior, we would frequently be very critical of. We'd be asking, is this an appropriate way? Is this an appropriate message for young kids, for young fans? And any number of things that we would be saying about someone else who did a lot of the stuff that he does. So, look, he's a great player. He is in the way that Rodgers is the best quarterback I've ever seen, Gronkowski is the best tight end I've ever seen. Going back to guys like Kellen Winslow and Dave Casper and players of that era, Todd Christensen, who used to catch a lot of passes. Gronkowski, the combination of his ability in line as a blocker and his pass receiving and his matchup nightmare that he is, he's the most talented player I've ever seen at that position. But he gets away with a lot of things in a big picture sense that we would never excuse from a lot of other people.
Talking to Mike Greenberg on the Mike Lupica podcast. Michael, you know, I know you thrilled to the Cubs winning the World Series. The whole country did, except if you were an Indians fan. Can you sometimes take a step back and appreciate, I write about this all the time, the incredible baseball renaissance that really began with the Cubs run, continued through last season, continued through an amazing World Series that had two of the greatest World Series games of all time, and one of which, Game 5, I saw in person, which is the craziest damn baseball game I've ever seen. And Michael, there isn't a sport, including the NBA, that wouldn't kill to have all of the under 27, under 26, under 25 talent that baseball has right now.
Correct. So what you've got there now are like competing narratives. You have the one narrative that young people aren't interested in baseball, and then you have the other that sport still has an ability to captivate some people in America. I mean, it's generations of Americans that the other sports do not have. Having said that, and yes, everything you said is 100% right. They have had back-to-back magnificent postseasons. I can't remember a time in the last decade that it felt like people were as riveted to it. I go back to, there was a year, I guess it would have been 03, the year the Yankees and the Red Sox had that incredible seven-game series, and Boone hit the home run, and the Cubs blew a 3-1 lead to the Marlins that year. That year's postseason, I remember, it felt like the entire country was hanging on every pitch. They've had back-to-back years of that. And they also have found themselves in a very sweet place with the way the world has changed. It used to be that if you did not drive enormous numbers of people to television screens, then you weren't that valuable. Now, if you can drive solid numbers of people to television screens repeatedly, you are the most valuable property there is. So Major League Baseball is printing money right now. The complaint that people will have sometimes, or the criticism that it has become a regional sport, is one of the reasons they have become basically an ATM. They provide content for cable systems or whomever it is that televises their games locally that people would kill for, the way television has splintered in this age. So they find themselves at a sweet spot in a couple of different ways. Having said that, you know, I have teenagers, and I will tell you right now, and I know your boys, I see them on Twitter all the time and everything else, are crazy baseball fans. And my teenagers, who are big sports fans, are a lot less interested in baseball than they are in basketball right now. And maybe that's an unfair comparison, but the best first step would be to make sure that everyone who is under the age of 20 knows all of these guys you're talking about, not just Aaron Judge because he's so darn big, but all of these under 27 superstars that are out there. That to me is their next challenge, is to turn these guys from really good players into genuine celebrities, because I think that is when you have the potential to go to another level where basketball has gone right now.
Talking to Mike Greenberg, who, again, this is my holiday gift to him, because if not, he would just be opening his window up in Connecticut and shouting out these opinions. Michael, so has it been announced yet that LeVar Ball will be your co-host on the new show?
Well, I tell you, I mean, the LeVar Ball thing, what a fascinating story that is, right? I watched a little bit of that game last night, and you've become more active on social media. I think the most, I mean, outside of obviously.
Yeah, but I'm no good at it, Mike. See, I'm no good at it because I don't really get involved. But Alex Lupica, my middle, said to me one day, he said, "Dad, shooting from the lip was Twitter before Twitter." And so, Mike, I'm just doing my thing, but I don't get involved in the Thunderdome to the extent that other. So I'm never going to have a million followers because I just don't get involved in the give and take the way others do.
Well, it just makes me feel good to see you there. But either way, the point of it is that aside from the election in Alabama last night, the thing that was by far getting the most attention that I saw on social media were all of those shots of Lonzo Ball making plays and LeVar getting up and just out Spike Lee-ing Spike Lee in the front row at the Garden, which is sort of the prime spot in American sports right now. There is no more visible place to be a fan than Celebrity Row at Madison Square Garden, and he owned that moment. I don't think anyone is enjoying their 15 minutes, and it has turned into more than that, obviously, than LeVar Ball has been enjoying it. The one thing I'll say is, this I don't understand it, and maybe you could explain it. The whole Lithuania thing, and I don't think they're going to sell any shoes. So my gut feeling is the big baller brand is something that the sooner he makes the decision, I better go grab a whole bunch of money from Nike or someone like that, because at least my oldest son is a really good player and he's a really big star, and someone will pay us a whole bunch of money for him to wear their stuff. I think the sooner he figures that out, the better, because I don't see the rest of it working, and I don't understand how Lithuania is a step to that in any way.
Did you write off the Cavs early, or did you just believe that number 23 would figure things out to the extent that he's quickly figured things out?
Both, which is to say, I wrote them off a little bit because that's how I am. I am a professional overreactor. And no matter how hard I have tried over the years to talk myself away from that, I just can't do it. So, yes, I did at one point say to myself, you know what? This just isn't going to work, and LeBron is going to be out of here at the end of the year, and they should even consider trading him to get something, and Isaiah Thomas will never come back, and Derrick Rose, and all this was a mistake. And now, obviously, LeBron James has figured all of that out, and they're playing great, and as magnificent a season as Boston is having, and as terrific as Kyrie Irving is, and as good a coach as they have, I still think you would have to be insane not to think the Cavaliers will get to the finals. Interestingly, and I still believe that when they're all healthy, they are overwhelmingly the best team. You look at Golden State and you say, are they as much of a lock? You know, Houston is playing great. Let's see San Antonio, and they finally get Kawhi Leonard back and healthy, assuming that does happen. You know, there are some teams out west that look like they're for real. So maybe the Warriors get there, but maybe they go through a couple of battles on their way, and LeBron gets them a little bit tired as opposed to unbeaten. It should make May and June a little bit more interesting, and then it'll make July phenomenal. The NBA has a sensational offseason, and none like this one, because anything could happen between LeBron and Paul George and Carmelo Anthony and Chris Paul, and it feels like the list goes on endlessly of great players who will have the opportunity to go wherever they want. So that's a very long answer to a reasonably short question. I think the Cavaliers are back, and I think it makes for a very interesting second half of an NBA season.
A couple more questions for my friend Michael Greenberg. Tell me about the new show. From what I've read and my sense of it, it's going to have, and I'm not suggesting that, I'm not putting any value judgment on this, that it's going to kind of have a Morning Joe feel to it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It that's not a bad comparison. You know, I've said to many people that if you took SportsCenter and you took Mike and Mike and you took some of the other shows that are out there talking about sports in different ways, and they were all to get together and have a baby, that's what I would like the new show to be. I think that in this day and age, you have to be all things to all people, which is to say, on days when there's a lot of sports news to cover, we're going to be the place that covers it hopefully better than anybody. And then on days when what is required is good analysis of what you saw the day after the Super Bowl or NBA Finals game or whatever the case may be, then we are hopefully going to have the smartest and the most interesting analysis of sports that you'll find anywhere. And on days where there is room for it, I hope that we will be presenting it all with humor that people will appreciate and fun. You know, if there's someone very smart said to me the other day, one of the reasons that all of us are attracted to sports in the first place, if you were to boil it down to one word, that word would be joy. And I feel like we've gotten a little bit away from the joy in sports. So hopefully we'll bring a little bit of that back. And I don't mean in a Pollyannish, unrealistic way. When there's bad stuff going on in sports and has to be covered, certainly you have to cover it. But hopefully we can have a little more emphasis on the fun that these games are intended to be, which I personally believe the American sports fan wants right now. And so hopefully it'll be a combination of all of those things, and hopefully people will like it.
And how about my, you know, and how could we have gone this far into a podcast without you even referencing the biggest athletic contest so far in 2017, which is the Boston College Eagles beating the number one ranked Duke Blue Devils in college basketball last Saturday?
I don't know how we managed that. I'm embarrassed that we came this far. I enjoyed seeing both you and Damian Woody's reaction on Twitter to that. I am having my own struggles with this college basketball season because my beloved Northwestern Wildcats came in ranked for the first time and with expectations unlike any that we've ever had. And it's been a little bit of an up and down start to the season, though they're starting to play a little bit better. And I believe they will be good. But college basketball, it's remarkable. For the longest time, I said college basketball's regular season is meaningless. They're going to put every team in the tournament anyway, and all anyone cares about is March. And then all of a sudden, my team became good, and I'm living and dying with every one of these games. I'm making plans around making sure I'm in front of a television to watch Northwestern play Chicago State at 7 o'clock on Monday night. So it just goes to show you that when your heart is in something, all this stuff remains. And to the point that I just made a minute ago, it's the joy of it. You know, I'm sitting there watching the games with my kids, and when they win, we are delighted, and when they lose, in only the best of possible ways, we are miserable. And that's why we all got involved in this stuff to begin with. It's why I started reading your column when I was a kid to begin with. And I hope that we can get back to that to some degree and get away from so many of the things that are going on in sports that remind me a little bit too much of the things that are going on in the rest of the world.
Michael, my youngest son, Zach, who I talked about before, is my two older boys are Giants fans. Zach, by the power of Sunday Ticket and DirecTV, at the age of like 4 or 5, became a Packers fan, fell in love with Brett Favre, fell out of love with Brett Favre, and completely fell in love with Aaron Rodgers. And my love of sports this week, I know that on Sunday, Zach and I will be watching the Packers-Panthers game together. And I've got a picture of my two oldest boys when the Giants won their last Super Bowl in the stands at Lucas Oil. And everything you say is true. There's no game that I ever watched that isn't enhanced by watching it with my kids.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I know I always enjoy when you write about your parents, your father in particular, but both of your parents in your column whenever they celebrate an anniversary or a birthday or whatever it is, because that's one of the things that I miss. You know, when I do public speaking, I always reference the first time that my father, my son, and I ever sat together, the three of us, at a Jet game, which was when my son Stevie was 3 and he's now 15. And I miss that piece of it, you know, but that is what it's about. You know, there's still, when I'm watching the Jets play and I'm aggravated with what's happening and all that kind of stuff, I still hear my father's voice yelling that we need to fire the coach, which he always did. My father never blamed anything on a player. I mean, in all of his life, he was as good a sports fan as you'll ever meet. He never thought a player ever did anything wrong. In his mind, it was always the coach's fault, no matter what happened. But so that is what it's about. And yes, or actually, Stevie and I, now we sit and we watch Red Zone and we play DraftKings. He loves it. This weekly fantasy, and we sit there and he's like, "Dad, you know, Atlanta's defense just made an interception," and like that's the stuff that we're into now. We go, you know, we watch the Jets first and foremost, but even that, we take great joy and pleasure in it. There's a reason to be interested in it. There's a reason to be invested in it, and that's what sports is about.
Do we have a start date for the new show?
We don't. We have announced 2 start dates over the course of time, and neither one of them has. So I'm out of the announcing a start date business.
Sometime next year, we are building
a studio, and when it is ready, we will start.
If you build it, they will come. Michael, thank you for doing this. All the best to all the Greenbergs in this holiday season. We will do this more frequently across 2018, and I look forward tremendously to see the next chapter for you.
Thanks so much. It's great to talk to you. Happy holidays to you and all of the Lupicas, and I will see you soon.
Mike Greenberg on the Mike Lupica podcast. I tell you people all the time, this is the kind of conversation we have every single week. I only talk to people I want to talk to, from show business and the arts and politics and sports. And we did it again today. Please download it. The numbers continue to grow. Please subscribe to it. Go to the comment section and leave a comment. And we'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.